Okay, thanks, Mark. I got kind of curious about this. We heard yesterday a lot of plans about using the 2,000 bulls or the 1,000 sequenced bulls and other information to start bringing that into our genomic predictions. And I've been looking at that a little bit, and if we start with some information on the HD chip, where this, you see pictures like this where we have SNPs that are close together that are quite highly correlated, and the further you get apart, those correlations drop. So, based on this, we'd expect that if we start putting SNP right on top of our QTL, that that'll give us, we can just use these SNP chips for our predictions. And so we'd expect these SNP genotypes to tell us what the sequence variation is. But then you start looking at some of the 1,000 bull results. And the imputation accuracy you see from them is on average seldom more than about 75%. Nowhere close to the 98-99% we usually hear about from imputation between SNP chips. So that started to put up a red flag for me. And then out of some sequence from GPE bulls, we see that these frequency distributions are quite different. Where the HD is skewed towards higher minor allele frequencies, while most of the sequence variation is quite low frequency, half or less than 0.05%, and even above 0.05, it's still heavily weighted at the low end of the range. So based on that, the average R squared you'd expect between, or the maximum R squared you'd expect between the mean high density and the mean sequence variant is about 0.35. So based on that, can we still expect the SNP genotypes to indicate what the nearby sequence variants are? For this, I looked at a set of bulls that have been used in GPE. That these 176 sires cover most of cycle 7. They've been genotyped with the high density chip. We have low coverage, about 2.5x whole genome sequence, as well as high coverage of just the exome or coding regions. High coverage there is about, I think, 25x of the coding regions. And this included about 15 to 20 bulls per breed, as well as a number of F1 crosses. SNPs I looked at were any HD with minor allele frequency greater than 0.05, as well as non-synonymous SNP in coding regions with minor allele frequency greater than 0.05. And I looked at the genotypes from the HD, non-synonymous SNP genotypes that we called from sequence, and compared R-squared between possible pairs of HD SNP, non-synonymous SNP with the HD, using this full set of 176 bulls, as well as just the purebred Angus and Hereford bulls. So if you look at the LD decay we saw in these bulls, it's pretty similar to what's been published, at least for the between HD. They start up over 0.6 and drop off pretty rapidly. The between HD and non-synonymous, those are quite a bit lower. They're pretty close to that 0.35 maximum that we computed based on mean frequencies. And if we extend that out a little bit further, we see that among all bulls, the R-squared drops, down to a fairly low base level. It's maintained about 0.1 within the purebred bulls. Either looking between HD and non-synonymous or among the HD SNPs. And what really gets interesting is when you start looking not at the means but at the distributions. This is distribution. Okay, the red is a comparison of R squared between high density SNP within 2,500 base pairs. And most of those are in almost perfect LD. And you see a few with zero LD. And it's the opposite between the HD and sequence variation. The non-synonymous SNP close to a high density are generally lowly correlated, and there's a few high correlations and not much in the middle. See the same sort of thing within the purebred Angus or Hereford. HD are highly correlated and little correlation between non-synonymous and HD. And then looking at pairs of where we have high LD between HD SNP or not HD and non-synonymous, or between non-synonymous, and I'm calling high anything with an R squared above 0.81, so that 75% of the HD SNP are in high LD with at least one other HD on the same chromosome. So that leaves 25% that aren't highly correlated with anything. A little less than half are correlated with a handful of HD, and then they're almost a third that are correlated with several other HD SNP on that same chromosome. If you look at correlations between non-synonymous and HD, there's 80% that aren't highly correlated with any HD. A few that are correlated with a handful, and even fewer that are correlated with several. And we do have some. I never looked at correlations across between HD across chromosome because, that was too much computation. But there are few enough non-synonymous that I could compare non-synonymous with HD on all chromosomes. So, within all bulls, there's a small percentage that are highly correlated with something on another chromosome. And we have a little higher correlation between among non-synonymous SNP. Still two-thirds that aren't correlated with another non-synonymous, a little over a quarter that are correlated with a handful, and 5% that are correlated with six or more. And looking at the separation between these high LD pairs, among HD and between HD and non-synonymous, most of them are separated by at least 10 kilobases out to a megabase. There's more with that much separation than there are with less than a kilobase separating either the HD or the HD from the non-synonymous. Within non-synonymous, there's as many separated by a kilobase or less as there are more than this 10 kilobase where most of the HD are separated. I also looked at overlap within the two purebreds. We see several million instances of high R-squared between non-synonymous and HD within Hereford and Angus, and not much overlap within those pairs. Where this represents the sets of purebreds and, just a tiny percentage that is shared by the two breeds and within all breeds in that data set. And so I also looked at more moderate LD where something between R squared between 0.5 and 0.81 that would account where we might see pick up more LD. Most of the HD are correlated with another HD. About 80% of the non-synonymous are correlated with, at least moderately correlated with an HD. Still some that with no correlation with an HD. And among non-synonymous, we have, most of the non-synonymous are correlated with another non-synonymous SNP. There you see a lot of, there are a lot where you get large numbers of where one SNP can be correlated with several thousand other variants. And this separation among moderate LD pairs, we still see that, most of that is, fairly widely separated relative to what we'd get from the average LD looking at the average within a particular distance interval. And another thing I started looking at, we played a few years ago, we played some with, when we first started getting sequence variation, using flanking HD markers, flanking a particular variant to try and predict effects where we didn't have data to even begin to try to impute that variation from the genotypes we had. So I used a couple different models to look at R-squared between a non-synonymous SNP and the HD SNP on either side of that variant. One used just the genotypes and fitted as a simple regression with the genotypes on either side, or fit the possible haplotypes that were in this, where we could impute from our HD data, we could infer haplotypes that each of these bulls carried, and you know, so I fit a model that considered the four possible AB haplotypes from the HD genotypes. And in this case, the haplotype model always gave us a higher R-squared than what we got from the two genotypes. Most of them are quite similar. There are a few cases where, you know, we could get a high R-squared from the haplotype where the genotype model didn't give us a real high R-squared. But the, you know, that still isn't much of an improvement over what we had before. And if you're looking at the distributions, most of them, the LD between the non-synonymous SNP and the two flanking SNP is still usually low, and a few instances where we get some high R-squared from the flanking SNP. You know, so what we're seeing, you know, from these sequence genotypes is typical of what we might expect from unknown, from leakage disequilibrium between unknown QTL and our SNP genotypes that we have now. You know, there's not a whole lot of high LD between our sequence variation and the SNP chips. There may be a few QTL that have strong correlations with the genotype SNP, but there's going to be a lot that we're missing. There's a lot of low to moderate LD, and you know, so a lot of QTL are going to have weak correlations with a lot of SNP that we do have genotype. So for genomic selection, I don't think that's going to affect anything as long as those correlations are consistent between our training and target populations. You know, the SNP effects we get from that they're going to result from a combination of many QTL that are correlated to SNP genotypes, and you know, as long as those correlations are consistent, we'll be able to predict fairly well. I think that some of our GWAS results, our associations between individual SNP and phenotype, may be a little misleading. That, you know, whenever we see a high signal from GWAS, we look to see what's immediately surrounding that signal to give us an idea of the genes that might be involved. And you know, is that signal, you know, should we be looking right, you know, within that few KB around those SNP, or should we widen our search some, you know? You know, so you know, the signal could also result from low correlations with lots of QTL that we can't isolate any one of those. And, you know, where we have a lot of non-synonymous SNP with no correlation with the HD, are we missing some QTL completely because of that? You know, there's just nothing that marks those QTL. You know, can we get around this and start using sequence variants, you know, instead of what's on the HD for our genomic predictions? You know, and we we'd expect the variation in coding sequence would be more likely to be a QTL than the random SNP in energenic and intronic regions. Where they've done this in the imputing sequence variation within the from the HD and the 1,000 Genomes Project, they've got, a couple percent increase in accuracy over using over the HD predictions. And variation in coding sequence, if we would go to using variation in coding sequence, we're still not going to eliminate LD. That, our coding sequence variances are correlated, so that any effect we estimate is still going to be influenced by anything that's correlated with it. So you can have other QTL that would influence the estimate you get for a particular variant. And so is that still going to be population specific? So that we'd hope that using the sequence variants, we could get close, we'd be using the real QTL, but the effects we get for those, may still be population dependent. And how we would use coding sequence variation, we've seen, the current plan has been to impute using our SNP chip genotypes, impute to sequence variation. That doesn't look so far hasn't been nearly as accurate as the imputation within from different levels of SNP density, and it drops off below a minor allele frequencies of about 0.15 to 0.2. Above 0.2, we can get up to 85 or 90% accuracy, but still not approaching what the imputation amongst SNP chips are. And that may get better the more sequence we get and can better define haplotypes that do exist. And there are a couple things coming out. Jerry talked about one. They're working on an assay, of coding variants that we can directly obtain genotypes for a lot of these variants that have been discovered from various sequencing projects. And there's also options of custom assays for specific variants that look interesting. So, I think we're probably going to wind up wanting to get a lot more direct genotypes before we can really get imputation to where we can depend on accurate imputation to sequence level. So that's what I have. If there are any questions, I'll try and answer.